This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This summer, the Supreme Court dealt a major blow to public sector unions, the Janus decision. The court ruled these unions cannot collect money, known as agency fees, from non-members who are covered by collective bargaining agreements. Some labor experts predict teachers' unions will lose members as a result and weaken them as a political force. Unit 5 Teachers Union President Lindsay Dickinson tells GLT's Ryan Denham she hasn't seen many dues-paying members leave the union yet. And next door in District 87, Union President Joe Lewis says they never collected agency fees anyway, making them a test case for the post-Janus future.
In our association, we have never charged an agency fee. So even though, like all districts, our contract represents all members, and therefore union presidents like myself have to represent all members under the contract, even the members who don't join the union, they don't pay any fees at all. And I'm still bound to represent them because they fall under our contract. Now, that being said, we've had over our history right around 80% membership who have always voluntarily joined, and only around, you know, usually it's the beginning teachers and the teachers, to a lesser extent, the teachers at the end of their career choose not to join for various reasons. But generally speaking, we've had very good membership numbers without that agency fee. So as far as Janus goes, we're kind of a test case, I think, for what might happen in Illinois, which is, I don't know what 80, I mean, the numbers are higher at Unit 5 right now, but 80% membership does seem to sustain us at Bloomington Education Association pretty well.
And so, Lindsay, with Unit 5 Education Association, what is the split between teachers who are full union dues paying members and then those who in the past have been covered with agency fees that they've paid?
Sure. So we have about 1,000 teachers and certified staff in Unit 5. Prior to Janus, we had three members that were fee payers. They were fair share members. So they received all the same benefits of the contract, but if something were to go wrong, they wouldn't have union representation unless it fell under the contract. Now we have about 7 or 8 members from new hires or people that have dropped. So we have about 7 or 8 that are not members right now. We call them potential members. So right now we have about 7 or 8 out of 1,000. I mean, hopefully we fall under the same success rate as Bloomington did with about 80%, but right now we're looking pretty good.
What kind of feedback and questions did you hear from your members in the weeks and months after the Janus decision at the Supreme Court?
So for us, it was a lot of people asking questions of what does this mean? What is the difference? And now we have to educate members on what the difference is and what things you receive by being a member of the union or a potential member. So I think on my behalf, it's been a lot of education of members, a lot of things of this is what it means for us. Yes, you still have a contract. Yes, you're still on the salary schedule. Yes, everything is pretty much the same. Just now some of the added benefits of being a union member is different.
Although the decision did not affect or impact our members, which I told them that. There was a big change coming that we tried to educate our members about starting last spring, and namely that's the Freedom of Information Act requests, which have been sought by people who want to mail out to our members information about Janus, telling them, hey, now you can drop. And even though our members weren't paying an agency fee, that was something that me and my staff spent a lot of time trying to educate our members about whether or not these mailings apply to them, which, you know, of course they did. They could drop their membership, but we had to ensure them, make sure they understood that there were really no changes for them, and if they wanted to remain members, they could do so.
Have you seen a lot of outreach from, you know, these sort of opt-out groups that are trying to connect with teacher union members?
Absolutely. The day after Janus came down in June, I even received an email. There's two predominant groups, the Illinois Policy Institute and the Mackinac Center. Those two groups are primarily funded by Bruce Renner, our governor, and they are sending mailers out that a lot of it, while yes, you can drop your membership, but a lot of the information that they're including is completely false. Dues money cannot go to political reasons. They cannot go to politicians. So they're using all the money that does go to those politicians. People have to elect to give them that money. So they're using that and changing it into a falsity to give people a leg up to being able to drop memberships. I mean, I've received them. I know that a couple people in Bloomington this last week have received them. We expect that to start relatively soon.
Right. I just learned today that there's a mailer going out, and it has much of the same misinformation that Lindsay just talked about, namely that their dues money goes to pay for political races. And we have a completely separate account. It's called iPACE, that is optional for members, completely voluntary, and that's where the political contributions go. Dues money, far and away, goes to pay for maintaining the contract and using IEA's resources to make sure that all the districts have proper negotiations, the grievances are filed correctly, and I think members need to understand that the political money is completely separate from the money that maintains our organization's contractual rights.
You know, Joe, at the beginning you were talking about how the Bloomington Education Association has sustained all these years without agency fees and just relying on the dues that are coming in from union members, and then those who are not members just simply don't pay but are still represented. So since the Janus decision, have you been contacted by those in the education labor world to ask, like, okay, so how has it worked here? If you guys have been in the middle of the state of Illinois, but you've kind of had this model, how did it work? How were you able to sustain yourselves for so long?
Right. That's been going on for over a year now. IEA has asked us, because I believe if we're not the largest district that did not charge fees, we're close. And really, our message is simple. If members understand the difference, like I said before, between political contributions and IPACE and the fact that we have a lot of contractual issues, especially bargaining, and making sure the contract is fulfilled by all parties. Once members understand that, they see the value of the contract, because in essence, the contract allows them to make professional decisions that we as educators want to bring to the table, because we want what's best for kids. And since we're the ones in the classroom, they say, wow, this contract really lets me have a say in what's happening in that classroom. Once they realize that, then a membership really takes care of itself.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here in studio with Lindsay Dickinson, the Unit 5 Education Association President, and Joe Lewis, President of the Bloomington Education Association. Their unions represent teachers in Unit 5 and District 87, respectively. So Lindsay and Joe, in Wisconsin and Michigan, unions had already lost the power to collect agency fees. Their NEA teacher union chapters had lost membership as a result of that. One union official said there that we had to let people know that your union does so much more than just bargain a contract. Do you think that'll happen in Illinois too, that need to better explain what the union does for its members?
I absolutely think so. One of the things that I have been predominantly focusing on so far this year is all the professional development opportunities that we are provided because we are a unionized district. So things like ACEs training, adverse childhood experiences. We're doing a very large push throughout the country, but a lot in our own district, about the trauma that children go through at home, and then what we as teachers and as educators can do to help them be successful in their lives at school. Things of mindfulness and meditation and you know, strategies that they can pull out of their toolbox when a difficult situation arises with them. So we have to make sure now that people understand the other benefits besides just contract negotiations that we're able to provide. Now, if I look at Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, one of the big things that has always been told is that when they lost their power to collectively bargain, and when they lost all these union rights, that people had all these other rules applied to them. Women had dress codes. They had to go to school in dresses or skirts and high heels, and all of these really bad case scenarios. So we have to continue here in Illinois to make sure that people see the benefits of being in a union and the benefits of being unionized to make sure that we maintain our membership.
Illinois Education Association, with all of our members, they provide a lot of training. And earlier I mentioned that the union, in my view, allows us to make a lot of professional decisions. Well, IEA gives us training to help us articulate those things that we do in the classroom that we bring to kids. And like I said, we're the ones in the classroom every single day. And with IEA's resources, we're able to translate that into better outcomes for the kids, which then allows us to go out and say, hey, everyone wants what's best for kids, everyone at the table. But we were able to take what we've learned and explain to them how all these things that our union has allowed us to learn are helping our students in the classroom.
So in communities and states with agency fees and public sector collective bargaining, I guess what's the flip side of that? Is there any proven relationship in those types of states to higher teacher salaries, higher school funding? What are some of the connections that Illinois may lose as a result of this?
So when right-to-work states started really becoming prominent and throughout the media a couple of years back, there is a correlation between having unions and having union rights and higher wages. So if you look at like the top states that have collective bargaining, it is proven that teachers' salaries are higher in those states than in other states. The thing that always is hard to deal with is that in impoverished communities, you know, you have to make sure that you are one collective voice to be able to fend for and fight for what is right. Because like Joe said, whatever the teachers' working conditions are, that's our students' learning conditions. And we have to make sure that not only are our teachers successful, but our ultimate goal is to make sure that our students are successful. So one of the biggest pieces of that is having a salary that people can live off of. So collective bargaining is a joint correlation to having a higher starting salary and having a higher wage.
I wonder whether or not we'll see more strikes as a result of this decision. If every state in the country is going to be playing by these types of rules now, are we going to see more dramatic actions by teachers who don't have a satisfactory experience at the bargaining table?
I think that's a fascinating question. I tried to follow as much as I could the West Virginia strikes, and the was it Colorado,
Arizona,
Kentucky, Arizona, and it seems, I mean, some of those states seem to have unions that were somewhat robust. Some didn't, but in the end, I think it just depends. I mean, the union is the teachers. I mean, a lot of people I think misconstrue the union as a top-down organization. It's really not. So I think in those states, maybe they. I don't want to speculate too much, but in our case, our teachers see the value of the union and are able to speak through it, and therefore we haven't even talked about a strike in years, and that's speaking District 87 without fair share. So all I can guess from what I've read in those states, those teachers felt like they lost their voice. And yeah, teachers are probably going to become more militant because they'll see negative impacts on the students in their classroom. And if that happened here, I would imagine we would become angrier as well. But right now, our voice is heard, and that's important.
And I guess if we look at West Virginia, you know, they had to negotiate their pay through state legislature. It was done by the state. It was not individual districts. And I think that maybe that has something to do with it. I mean, we know that if you are trying to negotiate a salary for hundreds of thousands of teachers, that's going to be hard to do versus our local contract negotiations probably would be able to go much faster with having to not so much talk about strikes or you know, problems. Being able to do it at a lower level would probably, I would think, would be a lot easier to be able to handle than doing it statewide.
When the unions are from the grassroots, that's where the power is. Then teachers are able to negotiate at that lower level, and therefore there's no need for militancy. They have their voice.
That's Joe Lewis, president of the Bloomington Education Association, and Lindsay Dickinson, president of the Unit 5 Education Association. They represent teachers working in Unit 5 and District 87. I'm Ryan Denham.
Hear more about the challenges faced by Illinois teachers in GLT's Skipping School series for a different perspective on the state's teacher shortage crisis. Find the whole series at wglt.org/skippingschool.